Across the ASEAN, only on Money FM 89.3.
The third quarter proved to be a little more turbulent for Southeast Asian markets, with foreign investors raising questions about the outlook of the region's various economies. To take stock of the quarter that was here, closer to home, Terrence Wong, the CEO of Azure Capital, joins us today on Across the ASEAN to discuss the quarter that was and what's in store for the last 3 months of the year across this region. Terrence, thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to hear you are in good health and welcome to the show. Glad that you're able to join us on the last day of the third quarter.
Hi again, JP.
Well, it has been a turbulent third quarter in the region as compared to other places, Terrence, and foreign investors have more or less shied away from Southeast Asian markets. Now, do you count yourself among those who are being a bit more hands-off on ASEAN markets that are outside of Singapore? And what do you think are some of the major uncertainties playing into this seeming reticence, at least from...
Well, I think there are definitely interesting stock ideas across Southeast Asia. And to put things in perspective, the ASEAN stock markets have actually rebounded quite a lot since its lows in March, you know, by anywhere up to 25%, even though they are still down year to date by around 20% plus, with the exception of Malaysia. I think Malaysia was the outperformer here amongst all the ASEAN markets. They're down just by 4%. And I think in Malaysia, because it is the glove capital of the world, you know, they account for a good, you know, percentage of the gloves that's being produced globally, and all of them have done tremendous. I mean, the glove makers are up multiple times, 5 times, 10 times. So we are looking at very, very different for different markets. There are really different growth drivers. One of the reasons for the region trailing global, global markets is the fact that, you know, it lacks technology stocks. And, you know, the tech guys are really the ones driving it, particularly in the US. So US are seeing record numbers. You know, they've rebounded tremendously since the lows in March. And that is largely due to tech stocks, which we lack a lot in Southeast Asia. Southeast Asia, we are good for, you know, producing stuff, the manufacturing companies. But while the stock indices are down year to date, stock market volumes have risen dramatically across ASEAN. And the biggest one, I think the biggest surge really came from Malaysia, which has doubled up in terms of volume, at least for the first 8 months of the year. Singapore, we are quite a distant second. We are up about 30-40%, but it's still quite credible. If you look around some of the brokers here, many of them, during April, May, there was like a rush. People were going up to start CDP accounts. There was even a wait of 3 to 4 weeks, which, you know, we have not heard about this kind of like rush for the last 10-15 years. ASEAN economies, I think, generally move past the worst of the slump in terms of economic activities. The worst was really in the second quarter, where the big part of the world was really in lockdown mode. But the pace is likely, the recovery pace is likely to be patchy and very, very bumpy due to uneven flattening out of the COVID-19 curves. You look at the likes of Philippines, Indonesia, they're still, you know, seeing record numbers right now, very sky-high numbers. And, you know, in Manila, it's extended, the lockdown has been extended to the end of October. In Jakarta, it's just started mid-September. So there are lingering concerns. Definitely, I think many of the global investors, if you're a fund, ASEAN itself may not be exactly interesting market for now, but I think given time, and the values will start to emerge, and that is when I think investors like globally will start to come back to the ASEAN markets.
Right. And, you know, when we look at the ASEAN space, there's a lot of cross-border risks across the ASEAN, in particular for Singapore. It's quite the unique economy in the region, but also fairly integrated to the rest of the region through investments or economic ties. What do you think are some of the biggest economic and market risks in the region that might pose problems for Singapore's economy and ultimately also the markets overall?
I mean, I believe that most people know that Singapore, we are a small open economy. We are totally plugged in, not only to the region, but globally. We are very, very dependent on exports, making, you know, us very vulnerable to fluctuations in international demand. And being an economy that is highly export-oriented, really not surprising to see Singapore's manufacturing industry contracting. And we have been contracting by quite a fair bit. And due to the lockdown measures, domestic demand, which is not already big to start off with, I think have sort of flattened. Many people are looking towards phase three, but we're already seeing, I think, some real movements. If you go to, say, retail malls, if you go on the streets, that it is already becoming a lot more crowded than, you know, say, a couple of months ago when we started to reopen up. And I think that this is positive for the economy. What we really have to look out for are deflationary conditions, because right now we were very, very we are very, very dependent on tourists. There are no tourists out there, so we have to bank on the domestic guys. And I don't think that, you know, Singaporeans ourselves can make up the difference. So you can see that in this kind of deflationary environment, we will have to try to arrest. And I think other conditions that we're looking out for, or that is actually like plaguing the economy, will be the low oil prices, good for consumers, but that adds on to the deflationary risk. Singapore's government, I think, aims to transition the economy away from its dependence on exports. And I think that there is no better time than now. And doing so will require, you know, skills training programs for lower skilled workers and additional investments in labor saving technologies.
So Terence, how would you look for investment opportunities across the region? We did identify that although, you know, markets have been a bit more challenged, there are still some opportunities out there. If you were to sift across the ASEAN, would you do it via region or country or via sectors?
I think right now, given that there are very uneven kind of growth rates across the ASEAN region, I'll look at it more from a top-down perspective. I'll look at it on a country perspective, and if I am confident, you know, that these countries will be getting out of the rut in the next 2 to 3 months, the valuations look attractive, and that's where I will look at some of the bigger, more prominent, more bellwether type of sectors for that particular country, and then look for the best stock, the best in class for the particular sector. So in the main, it is going to be very, very top-down driven when I want to invest in, say, the ASEAN region.
So, Terence, you know, we've also seen in the last couple of weeks that the U.S. dollar has strengthened quite a bit. And analysts might feel that this might be short-lived, but as we've seen, Southeast Asian markets tend to be very sensitive to the U.S. dollar. Is a strong greenback, if it continues on this particular path, is it going to pose some issues for Southeast Asian markets, especially in foreign investors who might be second-guessing or still aren't convinced whether they want to dip their toes back into the region?
Well, the U.S. dollar has been rising, has been strengthening over the last few weeks. And before that, there was a buildup of speculative U.S. dollar shorts. And when the U.S. equity market started to unwind, there was like a mini crash out there. If you recall, at the start of September, that's when I think the U.S. dollar started to strengthen. For Southeast Asian currencies, or for Southeast Asia in general, a strong U.S. dollar typically, intuitively, is not going to be great for them, because many of number of countries, particularly Indonesia, there are a lot of U.S. dollar exposure when it comes to loans. And with a strengthening dollar, that will actually impact the corporates. I think it is not as bad as the Asian financial crisis, but it is still not a walk in the park. So there is a considerable exposure when it comes to strengthening U.S. dollar will actually impact a lot, quite a fair bit on some of these Southeast Asian currencies. And that said, I think that Southeast Asia in general will see some form of weakening. And there are many different country-specific reasons for that. For Indonesia, as I mentioned, it is very, very exposed to the U.S. dollar. Or for the debts are very exposed to U.S. dollar, particularly the corporate debts. And then you also have, and it is more sensitive to investor sentiment than most other ASEAN currencies. For Thai baht, Thailand is very, very dependent on exports. It's very dependent on tourism, and you know that's exports is still around, but tourism is all but dead. So I think that's going to impact on the baht. And for Malaysia ringgit, it will be due to political uncertainty, the supply chain disruption due to COVID-19, and there's also relatively high corporate debt, foreign debt, which will also impact on the currency. So we're likely going to see a weakening Southeast Asia. There'll be weakening of Southeast Asian currencies, I believe, in the near term.
All right, Mr. Terence Wong, CEO of Azure Capital, thank you so much for joining us today on Across the ASEAN. I wish you and your loved ones continued good health and safety in these times, and we look forward to having you back on the show in the near future, sir. Have a great Wednesday ahead.
Thanks so much, JP.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.